back, everyone, to Frenemies, the podcast about B2B sales, marketing, and everything in between. Today, I'm joined by Laura Adam, a sales leader at Dream Data, queen of social selling, and obviously a passion leader within sales and marketing alignment, which we'll be talking a lot about today. Hi, Laura.
Hello, Julia. How's it going?
Very well, thank you. How about you?
Yeah, so good. I'm very happy to be here. It's the topic of my heart, and it became a topic of my heart the last 3 years, which has never been before. So we can definitely talk about what happened, like, in the companies I worked at and how the sales and marketing alignment seems to be working at Dream Data.
Yes, I mean, Dream Data, from, you know, what we can see on LinkedIn, and I mean, as I said, all of you guys are really great at social selling, posting lots of great content, but you are also posting a lot about sales and marketing alignment. So kind of from the outside perspective, I do get this impression of, you know, you do very actively work on the strong alignment between sales and marketing. So what are kind of the steps you take to have this strong alignment between the two departments?
Well, I think first of all, it comes into alignment. What is it that we're measuring? And we collaborate together all the time to figure out, okay, so what is marketing measuring? What is dripping into sales? Who's doing what? But at the same time, there are so in between lines that, like, you don't really speak about, is this my job? Like, social selling is the sales or marketing job? No, we're all going after the same target, which is revenue. And once we all know what the target is and what we're going after, then it's much easier to calculate, okay, the MQLs that came in, what good of a quality those were. Okay, the sales accepted leads, how much did we pay for marketing to get those sales accepted leads? Is that too cheap, too expensive? How fast are they moving throughout the pipeline? So that data-driven alignment helps out to actually become one motor to go after revenue. And of course, it helps that you're friendly, that you're working together and all that kind of stuff, that we can talk about that. But alignment of expectations and deliveries, are we delivering on what we've been expected to, is key. Because that's where the friction usually happens. It's like, oh, sales always think, oh, marketing's coming in with shit leads and it's better we do outbound because those leads are much better, closing better, and all that kind of stuff you've heard before. And marketing is like, oh, sales is not doing their job. They're not good enough. They're not closing our leads. We're bringing in so many good ideal customer profiles over to you and nothing happens. But there must be some disconnect over there that happens in between, because both might be right, but in different situations. So we need to look into the data to figure out what's working in order to, like, get the rest of the noise away and start working together.
Absolutely. And I think you make two great points, because I think a lot of times online, when people talk about sales and marketing alignment, I read a lot of this, like, well, you need to have a good connection to the team, and oh, we do offsite events. And of course, that is a great part. But I mean, that goes for any kind of working collaboration, right? I mean, there should always be a good team atmosphere and you having the feeling you can connect. But to get to a strong alignment, I think it needs more than you kind of having sympathies for each other in sales and marketing. And I think it's great that you have the same target, like revenue, both in sales and marketing. But in my last work experiences, I also always worked hard on the alignment between sales and marketing. And I feel that a lot of times it is very difficult to change the targets. So to say that both sales and marketing report on revenue. I feel like a lot of times, especially when you're starting with sales and marketing alignment, it can be really difficult to raise this point, especially with leadership and CEO, that, you know, both should have the same targets. So are there any other layers that, you know, how you keep this strong collaboration that you have built and the strong alignment, but also keep it at this level when it comes to meetings? You also mentioned KPIs and these kind of things.
So yes, revenue is the ultimate goal, but that does not mean that marketing is only measured on deals closed. Like, did a deal close touch marketing initiatives? Well, I couldn't care less. I do. If there were some, it's nice. We can clap, like this newsletter was cool and so on. But there are also breakoffs of each and every KPI that we're looking into. So, and for that, you need data to look into properly what's driving what. So marketing brought in, let's say, 100 MQLs. And marketing already should know what is the amount of cost per acquisition I'm ready to pay for an MQL. How much is too much? How much is too little? Once you know that, then you're able also to follow those MQLs throughout the pipeline to figure out those cheap MQLs, did they actually convert? It could be that they're really, really good and they moved over to the further steps of the pipeline. How about the expensive ones? Are these the bigger deals or are they at all worth to look into? Maybe we don't want to bid on those anymore. So that's only like most of that from the paid perspective, how much you want to pay for that. But that goes through to through content as well. If you map which content was driving top of funnel and is helping clients to close, then you have the full map in marketing. What is helping sales to sell? Marketing is helping sales to sell. Marketing is not closing deals. Sales is the best at that. But as long as marketing knows what type of information and where do our clients find us, so sales has the easiest way possible to close those deals, and that is not the too much of expensive channel for us to invest into, then it's so much easier to break those down. So it's still going back to the data-driven decisions. But in addition to that, so there are a lot of things that we do at Dream Data. It starts with a Monday meeting. So we've got the pipeline meetings with sales where a representative from marketing is there always to know what's working, to know what kind of conversations are sales having. Are we working mostly on medium-sized deals or large enterprises? What kind of help does sales need to support that motion as well? Because it's a total different game as well. And in addition to that, marketing has access to all of our recorded calls as well through Gong, which also helps them to like nitpick all of the things that we're talking about. So you can search for specific keywords that prospects are saying on the calls. Or like, we spoke about that specific problem. I wonder how the customer, the prospect has defined the problem, so we can put that on the website and write it as customers actually understand and speak, so we don't define the problems as we think they should be defined. So there is a lot, again, it goes back to that collaboration, goes back to data. We would know what's happening. It comes from the calls, it comes from the pipeline views, it comes from where we see what the website traffic goes in and out through the pipeline and so on. And yeah, we do like each other. That's what we hire. We hire people that we would like to work together with. Usually none of the people look like each other. They're totally different. But when you put them in the field to play ball, like it's a perfect match. Because none of us are the same and we wouldn't be able to work if a marketer would be thinking just like I do. Yes. Because that would be a totally different energy. So I would expect that a marketer would have a different energy and the different perspective to things as well. So respecting the way we work and also helping each other out to understand what the client actually wants and how do they speak about things helps a lot. And then, of course, you do all the dinners and outings and parties and beers and so on. But it is not the ultimate thing that helps for marketing and sales collaboration. It is just an added thing to just because it's nice to be with your colleagues.
Yes, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I think one point I would like to stress that you already mentioned, it all comes down to respect of each other's jobs, right? It's exactly that. And I think that can be a point of friction a lot of times as well. Because we do have different strengths and we look at things differently. And that is where, a weakness can be, but also most of the times it's this massive strength of having sales and marketing, for example, also talking about, you know, these deals are in the pipeline. It might be like bigger enterprise deals. How can we actually push together to achieve this goal, or product launches to actually discuss together, because everybody has their own unique experiences and skills and looks at it differently. Same as, you know, we in marketing look differently when we see ads. We look at them a completely different viewpoint than other people do, because it's our job. And most of the times, marketers really like seeing ads to compare and collect points of what we find interesting or not. But same as seller sales leaders look differently when they are a buyer, right? You look differently at these interactions. So that's always a big upside to actually look at it as a strength, that everybody comes with their viewpoints to push towards a common goal, rather than using it as a point of friction and trying to separate each other.
Yeah. You mentioned one thing before about like how to align with the CEO and the rest of the team. What if the CEO does not trust that? Well, we are lucky that our CEO is a huge fan of marketing, and one of our co-founders is a CMO. So it's kind of a given for us to think, oh, this is how it is in all of the other companies. But in the companies where it's not, a lot of CEOs, or if you hire a CRO later, are sales driven. They have seen how sales organization works. Oh, let's hire 3 more salespeople. Let's hit like the phones and let's call, let's email, and we're going to hit the numbers that we need. Like the regular predictive revenue culture. I think the reason for those people not having enough focus on marketing or not trusting marketing delivering stuff is the lack of data. So if marketers are not able to back the stuff up that what I did, this $100,000 that I used this month on ads or something else is going to yield this and that amount of revenue or amount of sales qualified leads. If you're not able to walk that path through, it's going to be a very difficult job to justify, oh, this is branding or this is something else and so on. I meet so many huge companies where marketers are saying, my $1 million budget, well, even if I get 10 million, I will just do the same thing, just more. Like 10 more webinars and a couple of events more and write a little bit more of the blogs, because this is what I think it's working, but we never tried this out. So we just continue doing that, just double down on this. So if a marketer is able to say, okay, my budget is doubled this year and I'm expected to deliver 3 times more than I was last year, where will I put my bets? This is where you get alignment on the top level management as well. And as soon as it starts showing in the sales numbers, that's where the magic happens. And B2B customer journeys are forever long.
Yes.
I mean, we did the benchmark, and I think it's even longer now. We did the benchmark at the beginning of the year, and it was around 291 days from first touch with marketing till the deal is closed. It's getting longer. We can see that in our own customer journeys. It's so much more difficult to sell.
Yes.
But if you're able to figure out what's working from the beginning throughout the customer journey, to maybe you're not going to shorten the customer journey, but you will make sure that there is no leakage of the accounts that are going through that journey with you.
100%. And I think there is still so much work to do in marketing, because I do think that marketing for the longest time, both in B2C and B2B, got away or got understood as kind of this fluffy job. Because you could just, you know, provide content and do this and that, and, you know, something worked, something didn't, but it couldn't really be proven and so on. And we really need to step out of that, because we are in a world where we have so much data accessible that we need to make use of. And especially, as you're saying, in this day and time in marketing, first of all, you need to prove, but second of all, if you want to be effective in what you do, and I mean, we all need to invest the budgets we have effectively, because we don't have the same budgets that we have 5 years ago. Now we're heading into Q4, where in most companies, the budgets have just gotten cut, right? And you don't all of a sudden have all of this budget left for the rest of the year. No, actually, it got trimmed down, if you even have a budget left for Q4. So you really need to know what works to say, this is what I'm betting on. And if you have no idea, then really there's a lot of tech and tools marketing teams need to invest in, because there are so many tools available where you can gather the data you need. And as you say, looking at this together with sales to actually prove the case, not every seller, not every sales leader has to agree with every event, every initiative that gets driven by marketing. But if you can prove your case of, hey, this is actually effective, we can see that this drives impact, then you don't have any more work to get it approved. This is your automatic approval.
Yeah, and in the times when the budgets are cut, then it's not even like talking about what is it that you're going to put the rest of the budget into, but also getting an alignment from the top of the team who is giving you the cut of the budget, saying, okay, so with this cut budget, this is where we're investing and these are going to be the returns. And this is where we're going to miss out. So we're cutting initiative A, B, and C because those were very long tail and probably we're mostly brand related, which is we're not focusing on right now, but we're shifting everything into this specific initiative because Q4 is hard and we need leads fast. And if you know that probably all those are going to yield the initiatives that you need to close the Q4 deals, or at least to feed in for next year's leads, then it will be much easier to get the alignment and not to be the villain later who's like, oh, so marketing did not deliver enough leads for Q1 next year. Remember what we spoke about in Q4 when we cut the budgets? These were the consequences we are going to speak about, and these are the ones that we're seeing right now.
Exactly. So as you have a strong foundation of the alignment between sales and marketing, I do assume that there are still instances where there is misalignment or friction points. How do you spot when misalignments occur, and how do you tackle that?
Yeah. If I talk from my own experience, like our CMO, Stefan, for quite a long time saying, no, we're not going to events. It's expensive. It's shit. It's salespeople just are bored at events and are not bringing in the leads and so on. It's like, okay, Stefan, so let me test this out. Because at the beginning, it's like, no, we're not doing this. This is not us. We know where to put the money in. Let's test this out. So we tested out events in very small scale. I went alone to Saster to figure out how many meetings can I book. The cost of the event was my ticket, my flight, my hotel, and my food for a week. That's the expense that we can cover. Fine. No booth, no nothing. It's fine. I booked really good meetings. Some of them already yielded the ROI. Again, back to the data where we do register. Who did we meet? Who did we speak with? And did those accounts close later? So the ROI of event is always at least 200% positive. The next year, we have sent a team of two to the same event, and I went to another event to test that water out in a smaller scale. Because if we go all into something big, the big investment, which is difficult to prove working, that's where the friction will happen. Imagine if marketing came over and said, oh, events is the new shit because everybody after Corona want to meet and let's go. We buy the booth, 90K, and we fill up the booth. Like you spent at least $100,000, if not $200,000-$300,000 for that specific event, including the people that have to be there and so on. And then everybody's back. And then marketing is annoyed at sales because they were bored at the event and did not book enough meetings. But then marketing is looking bad because we overinvested to that event and it did not yield the necessary results. So that alignment and slow test of stuff that we don't feel to be too much aligned upon is really key. And I think sometimes marketers play the role of, oh, if I don't get that $1 million in my revenue, in my spend, then we will not be able to run this or that. But if we try stuff in smaller scale, try to figure out what's working and then scale, it will be much easier to prove the value of it and go back and say, this year we're doubling down on this and we're doing it even larger. We're sending more people, or we're actually getting that booth. I don't think anybody should get a booth anymore, but we're doing that because we trust this. But before that, you have to test this out. So that events thing, it was not even a friction. It's just that there was a misalignment to start with, and we solved it in a very easy way. It could be that if we send 3 people to that event already from the beginning, it would have yielded larger returns. But it's a slower and easier way to test this out. Is this actually going to work? So that was one.
You are giving such an incredible advice there that goes for so many business decisions of actually, you know, starting at a small point. I think it's also when you're in the starting points of sales and marketing alignment, you don't have to make a global plan. You don't have to throw over all KPIs, all targets everyone is looking at. Start with, I don't know, 1 local team and start from there and start at this level to drive this alignment. Same with new channels. Instead of, you know, I don't know, me wanting to invest in TikTok and saying, okay, next month, 100K, we're investing into TikTok. Start at a small scale, right? And prove that point until you have the data so you can actually predict things. And say, okay, so if we would increase investment in an event next year, same as you did, going from 1 sales rep there to 2 sales rep, that is, of course, a small increase in the investment, but you already have data to look at and to predict, okay, so double is, of course, also going to bring this more we can expect. So you actually, again, have data, have a business case to prove why you're driving why you're investing the way you do, why you're driving these initiatives.
Precisely. And it goes just as well for B2C as well, especially your like TikTok example. And it's like a year ago, or I think even 2 years ago, everybody was talking about TikTok, the new shit and so on. For B2Cs, it's working really well. But if you haven't tried it, and let's say you're in B2B and can see how well TikTok works, like, oh, now we have to try this because people are there, they're scrolling anyway. If you tried it in a big scale, you could have failed.
Yes,
badly.
Exactly. And it's always this this sweet spot, same as you said as well, between trying to be creative and thinking out of the box, while of course also having to be present, for example, where competitors are present, and of tapping into potential that seems to work, right? And testing the waters, does this also work for us? And I think that's also a very smart approach, as you say, of like, well, do we need a booth? No, let's think out of the box. Let's try this without the booth, and let's not go there the first year and invest in the booth, the design, and all of this, right? Let's test the waters at a smaller scale. And that's, you know, I think a viewpoint a lot of companies, especially more traditional companies, often forget of, well, there is not just this one approach to do things. There is not just this one approach to do an event. There are more ways you can go to an event and be present as a company than having a booth and investing in that.
Exactly. Okay, so there's a next example about sales and marketing alignment that kind of not always goes right. And I think this one is like very, very typical for most of the B2B companies. So marketing brought in inbound leads that are perfect, ideal customer profiles. Like the size and the people joining the meetings and everything is perfect. And the problems we're solving are amazing. Like everything fits. And then the deal doesn't close. Or the deal is dragging.
We've all been there.
Yeah. And then marketing comes back and says, what's up, sales? So how is your work doing? How is the account X going? Like, why haven't you closed this yet? This is an amazing deal. And then you, of course, explain whatever has been happening and so on. But your explanation is not good enough, whatever you say. because it was a perfect ICP, but there are things that marketers think differently than sales do. So you as a salesperson, you are qualifying the deal in, you're doing the discovery, you're working one-to-one with a client. And there are so many outside factors that can happen as well, in addition to what you can do, not just the competition. I mean, your competition nowadays, most of the time says, do nothing. Yep. Stay where you are.
Exactly.
There is no budget. Or let's just try to do it ourselves and see what happens. And let's wait for next year because the budgets are going to be higher, hopefully. And when a marketer comes back to you and they paid that X amount CAC of that lead to come in, like, the fuck? Not doing the job right, huh? So the way I think this is easily solved is having marketers once in a while either join your calls or listen to the calls after the fact and try to see what could have been done better. So sales are doing constant coaching and trying to find out what questions did we uncover, we did not uncover, and so on. But if marketers can step into the shoes of a salesperson for a day, for two, or try to talk with a prospect, maybe not that big shot, just so we don't ruin this stuff, but try out to be a part of a meeting or run a meeting sometimes. It will be so much easier to understand that there are other factors than just the ideal customer profile coming in with their purse open to buy a solution in a month or two.
Yes, and I think it comes back to the point we already talked about previously of respect for each other's job. And I think that is a big respect point as well of, well, just because kind of in the data, you know, you predicted this and this many out of the great ICP leads marketing brought in would close, doesn't mean that that always happens. And it doesn't mean it is down to each seller in charge that they don't close. So I also work on this a lot. So basically, like with our sales team, I kind of do objection meetings. So we go over, especially when we see that performance changes, right? And all of a sudden the close rate goes down, even though quality of leads stays at the same level. We basically map out, okay, so have the objections that you're meeting in the calls, have they changed? Are there new objections that are coming up? As for example, oh, I need approval from like five more stakeholders within the company or budget and so on. So we basically have an overview of what kind of the, you know, most common objections are we need to overcome, but also we see, you know, new ones popping up. So we can again kind of talk about, okay, like how can we tackle these objections? Of course, you from the sales perspective and sales techniques, but then also me and my team from the marketing perspective in terms of, you know, is there content that can help that? Do we need like business cases or, you know, all of these things? Mm-hmm. So we kind of tackle them together. And so we can also kind of stay on the same level. What are the market trends? What do we see happening in the market and the market conditions? Because those are things we can't influence directly, even though we all would wish we could, you know, influence that in this day and time. Time to make the sales cycles very short again. It's unfortunately not what we can do.
No, it's a very good approach. It should be working, at least to get the alignment better and better with.
Yes, and to bring another very specific example in, just a few weeks ago at Dream Data, you launched your new product, Reveal. Which again, from the outside perspective and seeing what was happening over the days on LinkedIn, seemed like a prime example of sales and marketing alignment. So could you just walk us a bit through like the process? Because of course, this is also product launches are interesting because they include, of course, also then the product department, right? Of how you plan that and how you like, you know, for these exercises, ensure this strong alignment.
Yeah, I will walk you through the how did we get this launch to look as big as possible for everybody. But to begin with, as you're mentioning, product team is key in this collaboration as well. So we knew that this product is coming out around a quarter ago. So we knew that it's coming for at least 3 months ago. And what is it going to be about? It was available in Dream Data's demo account to test this out for us and to try to see how are we going to present this and how is this going to work. The next thing that happened, then product team launched it, a better version for us in sales to start talking with prospects. So we started presenting it to prospects and listening to their feedback. How are they seeing this? Is this useful? Could be that we will still need to tweak this in the product team. We share the calls from the customers, where they have been speaking about this, what did they love about it? So marketing can know what kind of messaging are we going to use in this. So all this collaboration now we're having, including actually customer success as well, because customer success started to tell our current clients that we have this in beta, go in and test, what do you think? So the whole team of marketing, sales, customer success, and product were aligned on what's coming, how do we talk about this, and they were building all the messages from messaging from marketing side on around that. When we knew what the release date is going to be, we started talking about what is it that we're going to do in order to make this as big as possible. This is not the first time we're releasing something, so we tried this before and we knew what's working. So one of the big legs of all this was coordination on LinkedIn. We've got a heavy presence on LinkedIn, and the last time when we released our Google Analytics alternative for B2Bs at Dream Data, we did exactly the same thing, but at a smaller scale. So we asked a lot of people around on LinkedIn and the customers and the prospects, would you be sharing this? Would you be talking about this? So it's not just about the click on the product hunt upvote, but more so everybody can see that we're releasing this and what is the clear message about this. So we created very easily shareable information for whoever who would like to be engaged in this conversation. Both benchmarks that are easy to talk about, messaging as well. And we reached out personally to people that we asked for help during the release. And when you are a person and asking personally in a nice way for a little bit of help, while you were giving so much of value on LinkedIn before and have been nice to all those people before, it's not too difficult to pull the favors back. Most of the people said yes. Some of the people would be posting on LinkedIn about this that are not Dream Data. Some of them said, fine, I will be engaging with that. So that was planned along with all the marketing collateral. And when we had the release date, marketing kicked off the release. Everybody was supposed to talk about this on LinkedIn, that this is important for us, and poke around the people that have already said yes, that we will support this motion as well. So going all the way from product, including clients, including messaging, and including the virality of that so everybody can see that we're releasing this, was a huge success. Like, it was so successful. We still need to calculate all of the numbers of how it happened. But whoever I spoke with, they knew that we released a feature called Reveal. Maybe they didn't know what it is about, or they only knew that it is to do something with intent data, but that's enough.
Yeah.
Absolutely enough, because we covered the market. It was huge. So this is how the process worked out, and now we're seeing the results of that. Prospects are coming in to call saying that I actually am coming in because of this specific thing you released the last couple of weeks.
Yes, and again, I think you're giving a lot of incredible advice there. First of all, of course, congrats to the successful launch. Second of all, it's of course amazing to hear that you also have this strong alignment across departments, because it is so key. And a lot of times with product launches, at least as I experienced it, you can get knowledge of that too late in marketing, and then you're trying to run after and do your best. And it's, of course, really great that you set everybody off to success for having such a long, like, planning loop. So everybody, you know, sellers know exactly what the product is about, had time to test it. I mean, that's a fantastic starting point. But also, the advice you give with, you know, I think people always want to help, but you need to let them know how. And you made it very easy for people to get involved and help, right? It's not, you're not asking for too much. You're saying, hey, these are like, you know, post copies and numbers you can rely on. If you want to help, you can help in these four ways, and you choose yourself, which makes it so easy for people to get involved, right? Without just kind of throwing it out there, hey, please post, which can be a big barrier for a lot of people. Again, from the outside, it looks incredibly well planned, and I can only agree. It was everywhere. So I saw Reveal pop up in like these weeks a lot, which is of course great to see that it works out the way it's planned, or even better.
Very happy to hear that. Yeah, it's a big release, and it has built up a lot of early pipeline for us already now after that one, which was the goal of it all.
Yeah, that's great. So to wrap this up, we of course already covered some of these things, but if you would have to give advice to companies that, you know, don't have a strong sales and marketing alignment, where would you advise them to get started on this?
Start talking to each other of how each other's jobs looks like. Like, try to understand, if you're in sales, try to understand how does the marketer's job look like in a very friendly way. Well, what are you measured upon? If they're measured on top of funnel and stuff is not dripping down into sales, well, that's pretty understandable. Try to ask how they're planning to hit the goals that they're set. What are the initiatives that they're planning? How do they measure that they're successful? And the other way around, if you're in marketing, try to sit on those sales calls or talk with salespeople. What is it that you put emphasis on when you qualify the opportunities in or out if they're coming from inbound? How do you figure out what marketing initiatives will be working so we can build more of those? Tell the marketing people from sales what seems to be working, what your customers are saying. Have you seen the release, or have they read a piece of blog, or they've heard about you on the podcast? That's amazing collaboration already. But if you're a leader, or you're in the team that is being measured on the results that are giving the misalignment, start talking about that. Do we want to change this? Will this make any positive impact on the company? Will this create friction? Maybe it's a positive friction so we can start working together on that and figuring out what is it that we don't know. And from there, then, yeah, just be friends, talk with each other and try to figure out what is it that they're dealing with, because it might seem unsuccessful or successful from your chair, but it might be the opposite from where they actually coming from.
Yes, and I think I would also just add the same point as you made, but actually trying to come from a point of understanding is more helpful, because I have gotten that feedback in my career, like the leads are shit. But that is feedback you can't do much about, right? So it needs to go to the next step. Well, what about it is shit? Right? Let's talk about how we can fix this. Let's state the problem, but then talk about how we can fix this. So exactly as you're saying, so then diving into why did you have to unqualify these leads? So what doesn't match there? So it actually becomes to something that can be fixed and tackled together.
Exactly. Absolutely agree. You got this.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for joining me today, Laura. And of course, all the best to Dream Data upcoming releases, and a very successful Q4, and then of course 2024.
Thank you very much, Julie, for the invitation. It was a pleasure joining you.